Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Yes, indeed. Pastor Malupa, good afternoon to you, sir. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, man. Oh, man. Beautiful stuff there. Beautiful stuff there. Beautiful stuff there.
I've told you this before, my brother. You are the best of the best.
Thank you so much, man. Oh, man. Thank you so much, Pastor. Are you good, though?
Hey, man. I'm okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Cannot complain at all. I do hope that you are well also.
Yes, yes. The Lord has been good. The Lord has been gracious. And I have, the Lord has been merciful towards me.
Yeah, yeah. Now, before you continue, there's a message that is already coming in on WhatsApp. They says, yes, Mfu, when is the album coming out?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so thank you so much. Now, Pastor, thank you so much for joining us once again. We missed you yesterday, so we're going to try and make sure that we get the most out of this discussion. We are continuing to talk, of course, about exploring the nature of sin. And in one of the most discouraging and frustrating parts of the story of the origin of sin, one may even call it unfair, is the fact that we really were never part of this thing, the interaction between Eve and the serpent, and you know, Adam just being a weak guy, and you know, I mean, we're not there, and now we have to be facing the consequences of her rebellion. So, as a result, are we all born sinners? Is sin just our natural state even before we know or do anything?
Man, that's what the Bible says. The Bible says that we are born sinners.
But that's unfair. Is that fair though? Really?
But maybe let's take it from this point.
Okay.
Right? Where we look at Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. And I think maybe a mistake that I made at the beginning of the week was not to give this as our main text consideration. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, that says, in beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Let me leave the other issues about the language and try to zoom in on the question. We'll come back to this later.
Yeah, I actually have heard you loud and clear. You spoke once, I heard you three times.
So now it says, in beginning God created the heaven and the earth. And now Isaiah 46 verse 10 then turns around and says, I everything was created. Everything is not necessarily material things only. It talks about the whole of creation, including its time from the time when it was being created all the way to the time when it shall when it shall be closed, I have no diction to put this, but the whole of creation was created all in Genesis 1:1. The devil comes and alters. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
Oh, wonderful. The devil comes and alters that part of creation when sin is introduced and everything. Now, when sin is introduced, we inherit, we're treading very softly here, please bear with me. We inherit that alteration. But this is as a result of Genesis 1:1 that says that the creation had been created in completion, not necessarily created for the sake of it to be seen that as an experiment, how it will turn out. It was created in completion because the understanding or the viewpoint was that when the human beings have not chosen to sin, this is how it will move forward. But now the problem became that the human beings then chose to sin, and that it turned into a whole different thing. So that is why Genesis 1:1 is a full creation, inclusive of the time factor. There's a progression there of creation where it covers even you and I in the loins of Adam before sin. So when Adam falls into sin, then we inherit that fall into sin.
Okay. We are not right then to say we're not part of it.
You are definitely not right to say we're not part of it. But we are correct to say that we are part of the redemption story. We are not part of we did not cause the sin. We're not part of the causation of the sin.
Okay.
Yet we are the inheritors of that causation of the sin. And so what we ought to be to focus on is the redemptive part. Maybe let me pass by here,
okay,
and talk about why Adam does not die immediately. Adam and Eve do not die immediately when they fall into sin, because you see, the devil totally miscalculates the budget of grace.
Okay.
When he influences Adam and Eve to fall into sin, his expectation is that they will immediately, we've spoken about a guy here, my elder, his name is called Spinoza. Spinoza believes that the proximity to the perfection of God as a sinner will completely obliterate you. And I argued in the past that I don't believe it, or I have a different viewpoint altogether on that assertion. I want to argue now for that assertion, and say that Spinoza is completely correct when he says if you are in close proximity as a sinner to the Shekinah glory, you will die. That's what happens in the Garden of Eden.
Say again.
If you are in close proximity to the Shekinah glory, you will die as a sinner. That's what happens in Genesis with Adam and Eve. Because while they are in Eden and they sin, the act of grace or the act of salvation does not begin when God kills a lamb. It begins when God removes the Shekinah glory that was clothing them not to see their nakedness. When he removes that, remember Monday we spoke about sin being separation from God. So sin separates us. God removes his Shekinah glory from Adam and Eve so that they are not consumed by that Shekinah glory. The Shekinah glory, the presence of God in its fullness, does not obliterate them because of their sinfulness. And so I want to quickly lead you to this point, Dan, and say that I know I'm preempting the question of the devil. Why or how he was chased out of heaven, why he was chased out of heaven. That was actually a point of grace.
Okay. All right. All right.
When the devil was being chased out of heaven, it was a point of grace on the devil's part. God was showing the devil grace because proximity of sin with God's Shekinah glory, with God's perfection, was going to obliterate and completely consume the devil. But God had to protect the devil and remove him out of his presence, out of heaven.
Protect
so that
the devil.
The devil is...
My goodness.
The devil is not consumed by the presence of God.
Ah, okay.
So his argument that, no, I want to ascend, I want to be like the Most High, I want you to vote for me so that I can become God, that argument is weak to its weakest point, because he cannot become like the Most High, or even become be voted into being the Most High, because if he is given a shred, a grain of that kind of power, that Shekinah glory will completely destroy him.
Okay, that's interesting. That's very interesting. Now, we and I understand that you've explained it beautifully. That in beginning God created, so that means that it takes care of the whole creation. So which means that as Adam sins at that point, it affects all of us in that. But truly speaking, now practically, and I understand what you are saying, but in the practical sense of it, you were not there. You were not there. That's a fact of the matter, and yet you are born. Subject no, when you are a sinner, how? Njani manje?
I'm avoiding the cause you are taking us to. Because you're going to get me into trouble. This is an Augustinic theological point of view. It's a Catholic theological point of view that argues that man actually is born, a sinner, and that is why they then argue for baptism of infants. It's because they must do everything in their power to remove the sin from that infant as soon as they are born. So I'm trying to run away from what you're talking about, because I don't want the listener to be confused in that point.
Right.
You know, I want the listener to be very clear that as much as the sin is inherited, the sin is not charged on you until you are able to make your own decision.
Now, to tell me, before you continue, being that the case then, it would appear, therefore, that we are possibly then destined for failure. I mean, in the battle between good and evil. I mean, if we are born into sin, of course, then nothing is good about us. And, we are shaped in iniquity, as the scripture says. So which means that as much as we are shaped in iniquity, there's nothing that's good. In fact, even our best is like filthy rags, which means that truly, there's no way you're going to be winning this battle. I mean, already we are born in that state.
You argue like Job, Dala. You argue like Job in chapter 9. Job says in chapter 9, guys, I told you, I'm innocent. I've done nothing to this man, right? I've done nothing to him. And yet he's punishing me as if I've done everything wrong against him. I've done nothing. I'm innocent. And then he goes on to say, I wish, I think that's 23 or 32 or 30, somewhere there. He says, I wish there was a mediator between the two of us. That's chapter 9 of the book of Job. He says, I wish there was a mediator between the two of us. Someone who, now, the characteristics of a mediator. A mediator must be truly in the middle, meaning that a mediator must be able to see my perspective and see your perspective, so that mediator can bring us to the middle ground and find an amicable solution. Now, Job says, God is too big and too majestic and too, he's too scary. In fact, when the chapter opens, Job argues that the voice of God, you can't even talk to him, just a normal conversation, because the voice of God is like the oceans of the sea. The voice of God is like, it's like multitudes of people speaking all in one voice, all at the same time. It's too scary to speak to God. Then his argument is that if there was a mediator who can be able to come and sit between us, the mediator must be able to see me as a human being. But the mediator must also be able to be in the likeness, or to be to stand as God in front of God. So the reason why I'm saying you're arguing like Job is because in your question, you are saying that we are, it's as if we're destined for failure. Yes, that is true. That's why we need a mediator. Someone who will see me for my weakness, for my sinfulness, and then turn around and say to God, but I, as God, I died for them. So Christ, Job prophesies about Christ in chapter 9. And I don't know if he knows, that he's prophesying about Christ in chapter 9. But he prophesies about Christ in chapter 9 because he says, I wish I had a mediator, someone who's 100% human and someone who's 100% God, someone who can hear me as a human being and someone who can reason with God as God. So that my destiny as a sinner must, its trajectory, its course must be changed completely.
You
are pushing me now to reveal issues I wanted to talk about tomorrow. You know the Shekinah glory. When you talk about the blood that is being spilled, the blood is spilled in the Holy of Holies on the mercy seat, right under the Shekinah glory. That as a symbolization that when they were now talking typology, that when the true lamb shall ascend the cross, that blood will please the Shekinah glory, not to consume those who are covered by the by the blood, so that the Shekinah glory does not consume those who accept the covering of the blood that spilled on the cross.
Now, you know, I'm going to have to let you go. But before I let you go, Pastor, we need to pass on this very important part. And I think it's important that we check this in and we clarify it once and for all. Now, I think that's why I keep on getting back to this, because it intrigues me. It intrigues me because you mentioned something quite important. So in beginning, God created heavens and the earth. And in that creation, all creation is completed. Now, by the mere fact of the fall of man, it means that it affects generations later, which comes to you and me. And so, by definition, we're therefore born in sin. We park that, and with that in mind, there is then generational curses where God says, because you have sinned, you will bear the brunt of your sin up until the third and the fourth generation. Yet, sin in its nature, in any case, is generational. So, effectively, this means that these curses actually have no point, because sin was generational even from the beginning. So Uthixo was just wasting his time to say no even to the third and fourth generation, because it was like that even to the 100th generation in any case. Do you get what I'm saying?
I hear you, man. I hear you 100%. Listen, so the issue is this, that when God is pronouncing those curses, yes, they are a result of sin, but the curses in and of themselves are not the general study of sin, or the general hamartology, that's the general sin itself. Those are specific. So when the curse comes, it's a specific curse that says you're going to be poor for the next four generations.
Okay.
That's a very specific thing.
All right.
Yes, there are many people who are going through poverty, but for you, because of what your great 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 grandfather did, you are going to stay in this poverty for the next four generations. That is different from being in sin, from being born in sin, and moving in sin. And here's why it is different. It's because for sin, the process we've just explained now is that sin is taken away by the blood of Christ.
Yeah.
And then the text that you are mentioning of the generational curse comes into play and breaks the curse as well, using the same blood, right?
Yeah.
Now, you have two separate things, and they are dealt with by the same object. The same object is able to break both things. Now, when you break the curse, you are freed from the curse immediately.
Okay.
So if the curse is about poverty, you are breaking that curse, you become wealthy immediately. It has no regard of what time it is. But when the blood breaks the sin cycle, it does not take you out of the sinful world. I don't know if you follow.
Yes, I'm following.
It doesn't take you out of the sinful world. It cleanses you from that sin. Yet you continue to live inside the sinful world. But with the curse, you are immediately taken out of that curse. And that is why we've got so many examples of miracles that are taking place inside the Bible. Because the curse, when the curse is broken now, you are wealthy now. You may not see the money now. It may come in the next week, or in the next month, or in the next year, but the curse is broken now, and you are freed from that curse now, and that wealth is on its way to you immediately. With sin, we are all waiting for the second coming of Christ.
But this sounds like an unfair punishment, but perhaps we'll discuss this tomorrow. Because if you are able to break the curse almost immediately, the curse that was pronounced that you shall, for instance, have poverty. And by the way, I think that the poverty, even without being pronounced as a curse, was as a result of the Adam sin. In fact, in any case, because there would not have been poverty had not Adam sinned. So that curse was already there in any case in the first place. That's why I'm saying, you know, this some gray areas here and stuff. But it becomes unfair to say, well, you can break the curse that is there for three or four generations, but this one will have to wait for the return of Christ and what? Nah, man, Pastor, really? I was supposed to be living in sin perpetually when we can actually break this thing.
No. Living in sin. Hey, yeah, your language is quite strong, Dan. Living in sin. Living in sin means that you are perpetually doing the sin that you are not supposed to be doing. So you are inherently, intentionally separating self from God. But living. With sin. Oh goodness, living with sin, you are not choosing to be in the presence of sin and be in sin. You are not sinning. You are choosing not to sin, but the sin is affecting you.
Okay. I get you, Pastor. I must say that we must catch up with this tomorrow at the same time and same place. I must say that you've shared a very interesting and quite curious, views and thoughts, which I think that our listeners are also learning a great deal, much as I'm learning also a great deal this afternoon. Thank you so much for this. Blessings to you. We connect again tomorrow.
Thank you so much for having me, man. God bless and the Lord be with you. We'll see you tomorrow.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.